Hello, everybody. Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody. Hey, team.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Hello,
everyone.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Hey, everybody.
Take some time to catch up by reading Pat Frank's The Last Babylon.
And Ayn Rand's
I didn't want to make sure that you...
Oh, it yeah.
That take some time to...
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Death Culture Suggested Reading.
You're doing it crappy on purpose. Don't steal my thunder. I do that well enough on my own.
Everybody, welcome to Death Culture Suggested Reading, a podcast where we read a book, then talk about it. This week, we are concluding our post-apocalyptic series with Cormac McCarthy's The Road. If you haven't read it, pause the podcast and do so now. If this is your first time hearing us, take some time to catch up by reading Pat Frank's The Last Babylon and Ayn Rand's Anthem, then listen to the last two episodes. If you like what you hear, give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. If you want to catch up on all of our other projects, find us at Death Culture BB. Thanks, and enjoy the show. Enjoy the show.
Ah! One more time. You did great.
Enjoy the snow.
Enjoy the snow.
It was right.
All right, this week we read The Road, which is a story about a man and his son in a indistinct post-apocalyptic America, we assume. I guess really it never says. It
says states, but
yeah.
There's a few references to other countries. So.
Yeah, but I assume it's America. So essentially this is just a story of them traveling. In terms of plot points, it's really just essentially a story of survival. So it's like they find food and then they run out of food and then they find food, and that's essentially the gist of the story until the very end when the dad dies. And
bro,
just give it away like that.
Well, I mean, we talk about what.
No,
aren't we? Aren't I? I mean, and then the son ends up finding somebody else to go with, so although it's a simple story, it's really a complex book, I guess, is the way I took it. a few interesting things about it. Cormac McCarthy kind of got the idea of the book from a trip to El Paso, of all places, where he kind of had just... It came from a single thought, which is cool. Having written songs and different things like that, I understand that, you know, there's sometimes a whole big idea comes out of one thought, and his one thought was Fire on the Hills, which is weird. And then he started thinking about his son. And then... And then it was cool because in an interview later, he said a lot of the rest of the book kind of shaped itself through conversations with his brother just about post-apocalyptic things.
Yeah, that's
cool. And scenarios for the apocalypse. And then I thought this was a cool line from a Wall Street Journal article that he said, when everything's gone, the only thing left to eat is each other. Which was pretty interesting. Yeah. Which kind of is why there was some cannibalism and different stuff in the book. So, anyway, it was also adapted to film. It was turned into a movie, which I think is interesting about Cormac McCarthy that most
books,
he's probably better known for the movies that are adapted from his books than he is for his books. So I think there's No Country for Old Men, The Road.
I think All the Pretty Horses was that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, All the Pretty Horses. So there's been several.
Child of God? I don't know. Maybe that wasn't one.
So anyway, that's kind of the synopsis. Lacey, why don't you start off by giving your kind of your big
my first impression.
Your reaction to it, your first impression.
It was a great read. I've read it previously, but I guess the big takeaway was I didn't remember it being written so much like a poem as this time when I read it. It's deep, it's dark, it's very intense at moments, but it's also very thought-provoking. It's a lot of... he does, I guess, a lot of inner thinking, I guess, or self-awareness in the book, and so you do that along with him. And so, overall, it was an excellent read. It's not very long, but it was good.
About you, Shu?
Yeah, it's a very thought-provoking... I mean, it's deep. I felt like it kind of delves into some of the extremes of good and evil, of the human experience in nature, which is very interesting. And then, I mean, I think it's in it, I would say, of the not that we're comparing yet, but of the three books that we've read, I like this kind of universe, this post-apocalyptic universe that he's written it in. I like it probably the most. I don't know. I would have to talk through that thought. But, yeah, really good. Really thought-provoking. Deep. I liked it.
Yeah. my big reactions, of course, I mean, just in terms of tone of the book, it was pretty dark, even compared to the other two that we read. It was, I mean, dark but bleak, I guess, would be even a better description. Just almost hopeless in the tone of the book. And then I agree with Lacey. I do love how it is written like a more like a poem.
Yeah, I would liken it to like one of those long story, like a Canterbury Tales or like something like that. You know what I mean? That it's like a 800-page poem or something.
Yeah,
this
but
is,
it's
this one isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not there's no chapters, there's no breaks in it. It's just one epic basically an epic.
Yeah, but then there's also parts of it that seem like it's just random thoughts of this guy's head.
Yes.
You know what
I
mean? Like,
yeah,
especially at the beginning, it's like, okay, like the it really feels almost like a diary of this guy's mind.
Well, yeah, and I like that, like, as I was reading it, I could almost visualize Cormac McCarthy sitting down at a computer or a typewriter, and this thing forming itself within him.
Yeah.
Just because we all write, we all kind of create, and so we know that process of like you sit down and you might type a sentence and it's one thought, but I love how that. It does do that. It's like pieces, and then it hones itself down to a storyline.
Yeah.
But it still has that same element.
Yeah.
It's just more...
Throughout the whole book.
Yeah.
Well, I would say... I like that because it... From the, like, us being, you know, writers is...
Very loose
people that write words or try to create essay, I don't know, whatever, try to compose thoughts, like it's cool. I mean, I would assume it was edited just like any other book, but it feels like it was like the first draft.
Yeah,
at points it feels.
Yeah, and it's cool because, like Tanner was saying, there's no chapters or anything. And like I was saying, you can feel the time pass with each paragraph.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm trying to say? Like, they never tell you. I mean, they do tell you that they're moving. And sometimes he does reference how many days they've been there or when they've been gone. But each time there's a new paragraph, you can tell that, time has passed.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
Even when he has... a paragraph of just like his thoughts or like, you know, something he's thinking internally, and then
So the and I guess when I first, to go back to my initial reaction, the first time I read it, because I had read it before, I think was when the movie came out. I think was kind of when it was right around that time. Maybe I read it before or after, which the movie came out in 2009. In November, so we had just had Waylon then, and I remember the first time I read it thinking a lot about that, you know, and really connecting with that the father-son aspect of that, and I think probably because that was a huge deal in my life, in my life at that time too, so I remember that being a really big reaction to me the first time I read it, and then this time, it was a lot more introspective this time that I read it, there was a couple of thoughts that I had that I'll share here in a minute, as far as what I, of the introspection of the book, but other than that, I mean, it is a great book, you know, I think it's a lot different than a lot of books of the same genre. It's a very different book in that way. I mean, and that's not to even say that there's a lot of novel concepts or anything like that, but the book overall is just different than most post-apocalyptic books.
Yeah, well, I think the post-apocalyptic setting was secondary to the book.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It's really just a good and evil story. I felt like it.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily a good and evil, but I don't know. It's more about this one relationship, or like these few relationships that this guy has, rather than, you know, what the circumstance of what's really going on. I feel like it could have the same.
Because there wasn't necessarily a lot of detail as far as even, you know what I mean, how the fire started.
Yeah, there's no backstory.
No, they mention a couple times about the sun being not fair. You know what I mean? That's what I don't know. That started the fires, or you know what I mean? It was just, it was interesting. There's a lot more, like you were saying, showed a lot more of just his relationship necessarily, but not the
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so that kind of leads us into to big takeaways. And since you started there, should I mean, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I like I kind of alluded to earlier, it's about how far are you willing to go, but I feel like who you're going to be. I feel like it's about choosing the person you're going to be, because they had to choose every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There was situations where they could have chosen to be, you know, what the son calls the bad guys, but it, I mean, the cannibals or somebody, you know what I mean? They could have chosen to do things differently than they did, but they lived on faith, really.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they made that choice every day. So it seemed to me like he's kind of juxtaposing two different types of survivors. Survivors who there's no cost, you know what I mean? Like, they'll do anything just to live. And then there's people who stick to their code, stick to who they're going to be, and, you know, and find a way to survive within that. That's what I felt like.
Yeah.
That was the big one. And then I love... we carry the fire.
Yeah.
That phrase that him and his son used to said, which, like, it doesn't really ever explain where that came from or what it means, so it leaves it up to you.
Yeah, I think that's kind of, I mean, it's kind of a phrase they use to describe what you're saying, that,
yeah,
like, they're choosing to live their... in their code, they're choosing to live out their code, which is, I mean, it, you know, I took away some different things, but maybe that kind of explains, because it, for me, it was more of a questioning of, again, I mean, again, to go back to just like I have in all these other books, is what is the point at which you feel like this is worth living and this is not worth living, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and I guess that's the answer is, well, I mean, if I'm the last person that's living by my own code, then there's no goodness in the world anymore.
Yeah.
You know? So... what about you, Lacey? What were your big takeaways?
Yeah, mine were, I guess, a lot of, like, questionings afterwards. So, like, really question, like, a place where nothing new grows, what do you do? Like, in a lot of post-apocalyptic books, movies, a lot of times it's messed up how things run. Like, people getting things to you, you're able to purchase things, but then you'd have to learn how to grow your own food, or
yeah,
to butcher your own animal, or you have to learn how to hunt, or you have to learn how to fish, or you have to learn how to do those things. But what do you do in a situation where nothing new grows?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's where it comes down to what Shug was saying, is like, at what point are you going to say, because those people couldn't plant anything in the ground, because nothing would grow. They couldn't hunt. All the animals were dead. There were no birds, no fish, no meat. Like, at what point do you say, what is my only option?
Yeah.
You see it? I don't... That's what I'm saying. That's what was really interesting, that Cormac McCarthy took it to that level, not being like, are you able to survive by being able to take care of yourself and using, you know, the skills that you have? But this is a whole different situation, I think, than any skill that you have.
Yeah.
You know? It was just interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where that, like, sorry, man. That's where I was saying the book is almost hopeless in that way. And that was kind of one of my big takeaways, is I kept having to ask, like, why is this, what is driving this man to keep himself and his son alive? I mean, he's only staying alive for his son, but what is his purpose for keeping his son alive? you know, what is he hoping that his son gets on the other side of this?
And that's what
on the other side of this journey, at the end of this journey, what is he hoping that his son gets? And I mean, because there's the part of me that's like, well, you wouldn't want to quit. You don't want to quit, but
because you keep waiting, like that's why they were doing it on faith. Like he kept waiting, I think, for maybe something on the other side.
Yeah,
you know, kind of like I think he knew. Yeah, I think he knew at the end. Yeah, I think when the people shoot him, the guy shoots him with the arrow or whatever at the end, that the son ends up going with. Like, I think he knew. I think that's why he was able to die then.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's what he was holding on for. Because, I mean, he wanted to be... Like, talks about him wanting to be with his wife.
Yeah.
Right? But he was just holding on. If there was somebody else that could raise his son the way he wanted to be raised. Or he wanted him to be raised. Yeah.
It'd be okay for him to go.
He had, like, that last little bit of faith or hope that he had. Like, he had just enough to keep going.
Yeah, and I guess that's the question that it really raised to me was a big... What are we scared of in death? To me, why...
Because he
wasn't scared of death, and I don't think the boy was either, but...
No. But he didn't want...
But he wanted him to be able to live on.
Yeah, he wanted his son to live on.
To carry the fire.
Exactly. Yeah. But he didn't want him to have to carry it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was the big thing, one of the big things for me too, was like, how brave am I really... You know, when we've talked about that before, how you're not really knowing what you're capable of doing until you're in the position of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And so, I don't know, how, what, would I be brave enough to do the things that he did?
Yeah.
Do you know, for his son?
Yeah.
I mean, because that goes back to me as a mom, what would I do to protect my kids? Do you see me? At what what extreme would I go to protect them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I probably identified a lot more when I initially read the book with the idea of trying to keep his son alive. Not that I would... I mean, if I was in that situation, I don't think that I would just give up and let my kids die or kill my kids so they didn't have to live in that world. I don't think that I would do that, but it's just an interesting thought of what purpose did he hope that his son would serve. And I guess, you know, it's to carry the fire, so to speak, and to, I guess, maintain goodness in the world, really, is what it boils down to.
Yeah.
To not be just a survivor at all costs, but to be somebody who still maintains a moral code while living in a world full of hopelessness and immorality, basically.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I liked about it, was just to the biggest degree possible. You know what I mean? He puts on the opposite side of them to the father and the son. You have, getting a fax at 11 o'clock at night in 2018. He puts them on the opposite side of, like, these cannibals that are just, I mean, the worst. You know what I mean? Like, there's not really much worse.
No.
That could go.
It's awful.
Yeah.
And that was one, I mean, that is one, I mean, I don't want to say good thing, but how he, Cormac McCarthy, really hit on really, I guess, dark things that people don't want to talk about that could happen.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Uh-huh. As far as that, I mean, if a place where nothing grows.
Yeah.
That would happen. I mean, there's going to be people who are going to do anything to survive. Yeah. I mean,
and it's not like it's not happened before.
Exactly.
It's, I mean, it's so happened, why would it not happen again? Yeah. It's happened in history. It's happened.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that he really
not just once.
Yeah.
And, you know,
talked about things that, yeah.
Well, and I guess that also is the, you can contrast the cannibals or the bad guys and the man and his son by the fact that the cannibals are really, I mean, what are they living for? They've degraded themselves to eating people.
Yeah,
so they're literally just living because they're afraid to die.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we already talked about it. I don't think they're scared to die. Neither one of them are scared to die, but they're living on for some purpose.
So maybe that's why they didn't ever sink to that level, though.
Yeah, because they weren't
afraid. Because they weren't afraid to die.
No, because it was like, if we stop being provided for, then...
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah. That's what he's
accepted.
And there's been plenty of times, and there was times when he was like, he felt like, yeah, we're dying.
We're starving, right? We're about to die.
It's probably going to happen now, or, you know, they were, where can we lie down in order for this to happen? And then they found something.
Which
goes back to, like, I think what you were saying as far as it's mainly a good and evil kind of situation as far as the book.
Yeah, but one of the things I keep going back to and thinking about is when they go to the farmhouse and they find the people in the basement and they leave. I felt like he had the opportunity, and like the son is the totally innocent, good soul, if you will, in the book, right? So the son is gonna do whatever the absolutely right thing to do. That's what he wants to do every time. Mm-hmm. Help every single person they meet. Try to, you know, if they have something, they give it to. So they see the people in the basement, right? And they run, they escape, and then they find the shelter with all the food, and he's like, the son's like, I think he mentions that we could share it with him or whatever. So, like, he could have gone back. The man could have gone back and maybe saved him. Tried to, you know, fight or make it in there and get him out or something like that. But I don't think it was what... I think he felt... Well, I mean, obviously he's protecting his son, but I think it was also like, that's just not our purpose. Our purpose now is just to survive and see this as something we...
Well, I think it's the same reason why a lot of people in the book weren't in groups. The only people that were in groups were the bad guys.
Yeah.
And I think it was because you can't... I mean, if there's 20 of you, you can't hide in a ditch.
Yeah.
If there's 2 of you, you can.
Yeah.
You know, if there's 20 of you, you can't all be quiet at the same time. If there's 2 of you, you can. And so I think that's why every good guy or every person that they were alone or there were a smaller group, because you're able to hide that better. And that's why, which was kind of, you know, I kind of thought that in the book too, because, you know, going back to the other books we read too, but why didn't they ever team up? Do you know what I mean? Why didn't they ever come together? And like when he found that the hutch or whatever with food or whatever, like, he would, if he had other people with him, they would be able to carry all that food.
Yeah.
They could only carry a limited amount, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then I started thinking, well, just for survival, they had to stay small. And I guess trust, too, as far as you don't know.
Yeah,
what was the sign? I mean, how could you let each other know, really, that you were a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah. So I had this weird thought too while I was reading the book. What if the boy is not real in the book? Okay, but follow me.
I feel like we need to have a Tanner's tinfoil hat segment in every week.
No. Go ahead. Because I did not mean for this to happen. It just happened this way. But I was really thinking, like, I mean, obviously you read through the book and the boy is acknowledged physically, but like what you were describing with how the boy is the absolute moral right, and then the man is the survival part of him. What if the boy is more is actually in a representation of his
goodness?
Yeah, exactly. And which I think
he is. I mean, and I guess that's more to the point of what I'm making. Not necessarily that the boy is not real and the man just talks to himself. Yeah. Although, if you think about it, I mean, it could be possible.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, the boy, again, like I said, is acknowledged in the book. But really, that's, I thought that was interesting, the comparison between the two, because they're surviving because of him, but they're surviving because of the boy too.
Yeah.
You know, because of the goodness, they're surviving, but because of the man, practically they're surviving. Yeah. You know, and so I thought that was interesting. You know, to kind of, I mean, it kind of echoes what you were saying, Shug, just that they're living by a code, and they continue by a code, and that's what keeps the boy alive. And actually, what made me think that initially is the conversation that he has with his wife, where she's like, "You're gonna need him to survive," and anybody who doesn't have somebody like him will have to make someone up.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what made me think, you know, people have to have a reason to want to live on.
Yeah.
Whether it's the fear of death or providing life for somebody who hasn't experienced it yet.
Yeah. You know?
And so, that was one weird thought. Yeah. That.
Yeah, and I really like how he made the son so kind-hearted,
mm-hmm.
even though,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's all, and he was born after the fact.
Yeah, but so, but I also think it's interesting how, as he goes on, you see the boy growing up towards the end.
Yeah.
Like, he more and more is hardening. Not that he's hardening and losing his kind-heartedness, but he's just, I mean, coming to the realities of the world, you know.
Yeah.
I know, but I don't feel that it changes what he's
no.
Yeah, what he does for people. Mm-hmm. It's he doesn't have expectations, you know, like when he's having the moment with the guy that was the older guy that was on the side of the mm-hmm. road, and he was like, "Well, are you going to tell him thank you? What if you hurt his feelings?" And the guy's like, "You know, I don't care." And then it said the boy never turned around to look back. Yeah. You know, I think at that point he's, and then I think that goes back to us as people, you know, why are we giving to receive something, or are we giving to give?
Yeah, just to give.
Yeah. And it's so, you know, out of all the awful things that he's seen and he's encountered, and he's starved the majority of his life, and then still be willing to give up food. And, you know, several times it talks about, I think the older man said it, and then his dad said it, that, yeah, you want to give the food now, but when you're hungry later, well, we'll see if he missed that fruit or we'll miss that whatever. And every time he, you know, he's willing to offer it and then never complains later on that he's missing it. It's such a good testament to us as people that we can still choose to be good no matter what we're going through.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a good view into just what people can be and how people can react in a situation like that, in a bad situation or an impossible or hopeless situation. And and I guess it goes back to kind of what we've said in the past couple of weeks. You know, I think you make that choice. You have to know what you stand for before that time comes. And then the dad knew what he stood for before that time came. You know, and then this kind of goes, and we're not comparing the books yet, but this kind of goes back to the first week with the story of the banker in The Last Babylon and his wife. You know, if something like that happens, there's going to be that moment where you choose, is this worth me continuing on or is it not? You know, and I think you have to know how you're going to feel about that before that moment comes, or you're going to make the decision to not live on. Yeah. So, what about favorite parts? Did you guys have any favorite parts in the book? I know, like I said, it's kind of a just continuous thing, so it's kind of hard to even just pull a part out. But was there something that stood out to you?
Kind of like I said already, just the carrying the fire. I just really liked that line.
Mm-hmm.
That they felt like they found their purpose, or you know. And that's the other thing, is like the boy, I felt like he reminds the dad of the purpose. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we carry the fire, right? Yeah. 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 That's why.
We're the good people,
right? We're the good people. Yeah. We're the good guys. Yeah. Yeah. We're the good guys. So, I liked that. I liked, I don't know. I liked the whole book, just the introspective. It engages you so much intellectually.
Yes. Yeah.
You're having to think about and question, you know.
I like even that. Rereading.
Yeah.
Parts to fully grasp it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes he's writing it, like, just like, you know, kind of like you mentioned earlier, like a diary. Like he said, the son said, the dad said, the son said, the dad said, and then all of a sudden it's like a paragraph that's like a whole poem of thought-provoking goodness, wait a minute, where did this come from? And then I had to go back and reread that to make sure that I'm fully engaging it.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm not just, because I can do that when I'm reading a book, because I read fast already, that I'll sometimes, you know, read it too fast.
I don't have to worry about that.
I've read
this book twice already in the past week.
To fully understand it, to make sure, I guess what I'm saying is to squeeze all the goodness out of it that's there.
Yeah,
you want to slow down.
Yeah, I want to slow down and really take it in. And one of my favorite parts that really stood out, and I wish I'd written it down, but it's the part where he's washing his hair. And he wipes his face, and it's about brushing his teeth or something too, and then telling him a story, and it's talking about how even in times of chaos and craziness, we make rituals,
mm-hmm.
we make habits that we do to make sense
mm-hmm.
to things, and he wrote it so great about building a fire and blowing into it to keep it alive kind of thing. And
Yeah.
It's so good. And so I just thought that is so true, because even in times of craziness, to have something that you really can hold on to and commit to and say, this is what I'm going to do no matter what. This is what I'm going to do no matter what. And even in a time of this craziness where they're starving and they're living under a bridge and it's in snow and they're wet and they're cold and all these things, he's saying, I'm committed to still fathering you, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm committed to still doing these things. And I really love that.
Yeah. My favorite part was just the part with the old man. And there were just a lot of good lines that the old man had in there. He was just talking about... for one thing, he says he thought the boy was an angel, which I thought was... That played into my tinfoil hat theory.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, I don't know. I just... what did he say? There was a really good line. I read that section and I really loved it, and then I forgot everything that was in there.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I really liked, to kind of go back to what you were saying, Lacey, was the way he writes conversations in here. Is so interesting because he doesn't write it like like you would write a conversation. Like he said, the father said, you know, there's no quotations, there's nothing, it's just lines.
No.
which also again then played into my crackpot theory, because it's one person talking, but nevertheless, I thought,
and I while you're, hang on.
Good.
I liked how short they are. The conversations, they're very, I mean, there's not a lot of dialogue that they have.
Yeah.
Only a few times is there like a paragraph.
Yeah. And typically the son is responding with one word.
Yeah. Or the father, the son's asking questions and the father's, yeah. It's just interesting. It's interesting that in all this craziness that's going on around them, like, it, life's so simple, there's not a lot to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just survive.
Yeah, so in that section with the old man, there's just I'll pick out a few lines. He says, how would you know if you were the last man on earth? I don't guess you would know it. You'd just be it. Nobody would know it. It wouldn't make it any difference. When you die, it's the same as if everybody else did too. I don't know. I just thought there's just lines in there, and there's lines sprinkled through there that I underlined when I was reading the book that I just thought were lines that I wanted to think about,
and think about,
meditate on, not in regard to the book or anything else, but just me.
Yeah.
How do I feel about that? You know,
because I think that's what I was saying in the book. That line right there, you wouldn't know. You don't know if you're the last person on earth, but you're still gonna be you.
Yeah.
You, because you made the decision.
Yeah.
And, like, once those people started eating people, being cannibals, they weren't going to go back to not being cannibals.
There's no turning back, yeah.
And so that's the thing, that they have to just keep making that decision to not be that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and you think that they're the last. It leads you, you almost think that they're the last ones that aren't, that are... The good guys.
Yeah.
Until right there at the end.
So. Yeah, and that's another big thing was for me, was like, what's harder, remembering what was or not ever knowing anything good? Do you know, like, who had it harder? The dad.
Oh, yeah.
Who was remembering what was and then living in the time. And, like, you know, he had mentioned several times that when my son looks at me, I'm sure he sees an alien, a guy from a different place. Yeah. He can't even understand.
He can't perceive of that world.
There's no way for him to even imagine. You know, his biggest imagining thoughts were, are there any other kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he can't even dream or imagine. Or so what's harder, the son not even understanding anything where he was full and warm all the time, mm-hmm. where he had a mom and dad,
mm-hmm.
where it wasn't always cold and gray, where nothing had color.
Yeah.
There was no music. There was no... Do you see what I mean? So many mm-hmm. things that he never even... So I don't know what would be harder. At first, I thought it would be harder knowing it and then losing it. But then at least you had a memory of it.
Yeah, but I think there's a really good line in the book that kind of touches on that, where it was right after the guy stole their cart when they were at the beach, and they take his clothes, and then they decide the boy wants to take it back because he doesn't want to die, and the dad's like, you just don't understand. You don't have to be the one to worry about everything all the time.
Yeah.
And then the son mumbles and then says it out loud, yes, I am. But both of them are worrying about everything all the time.
Yeah.
But they're seeing it from two totally different perspectives, you know.
Two different worlds. And I think because, he said that one time in the book too.
Yeah, because the dad is worried about the son surviving, and the son is worried about surviving after his dad is gone.
Yeah.
You know, like,
he knows
eventually his dad is going to go away, and what does that look like for him after that?
Yeah.
You know, and so I thought that was one line that I really liked. He said, yes, I am. And, you know, I guess if you look at, you know, for me as a dad, you know, I even think about that for my kids. This world or that world, it's all the same, you know. I will leave something behind. He left something behind, and my son will be the one that has to live on beyond that, beyond me, you know. So I think it's interesting, and that's where it goes to that father son or parent kid kind of relationship, where you're thinking about that in the book too. So one thing I wrote down was what exists in the after, what endures, meaning after this event happens, what continues on, you know, like he talks about the rituals and things like that, but I guess maybe that's what I was trying to ask, is maybe what you said, Shug, is what do you keep and what do you leave behind?
Yeah.
In that world, you know, what do you want to hold on to?
Yeah. Well, it's important.
Yeah. You even look at the cannibals. So we've talked about this. You know, ultimately they're seeking not dying, and they're seeking comfort in not dying.
Yeah, because they're the only ones that actually stay in one spot.
Yeah, and they're the only ones that,
have
food, I mean.
And have community.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so really, they're the ones that are the seeking of the comfort. They're the ones, even though, and that's, that. I guess that's interesting. This may be getting into comparing the books, and maybe that's a good segue, but that's kind of interesting. If they're the weak ones, the ones that are so many times, the ones that are weak in a group are not weak. And so the ones that are right fear the weak.
Because there's more of them?
Because there's more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of goes into that kind of goes back to the anthem thing, where, you know, sometimes we'll allow ourselves to be oppressed because we're overwhelmed by numbers of weak-minded people.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess it, again, that goes back to the idea that we talked about last week of when is it appropriate to die in a situation and when is it appropriate to live on?
Yeah.
Or when is it most effective to die and when is it most effective to live on?
Which is what and it's what I'm saying now that I'm thinking more about it, about him not going back to save those people. Because, like, that's what the kid would have wanted to do, but he didn't. So that the kid could survive, or that he could at least be a little around a little longer to teach him more things. But also, I think it's that he feels like those people that got captured by the cannibals were weak because they allowed themselves to get captured. Because he was prepared to kill himself if, like, they weren't gonna get him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. It's just...
Yeah, it's, I mean, those people that
were... So it's like they weren't worth saving because they were already weak.
Yeah.
He even had the thoughts about the little boy. When the boy saw the other little boy,
yeah.
He was like, are you sure he's fine? He's like, he's fine. He's like, well, I'll share my food with him. And he's like, no. I mean, so I think even it goes as far as, like, every little bit that they have, he wanted to contain because that meant that they would survive a little bit longer until the next thing. So even if it was just one person, he didn't want to give any more food away. That's why it was so hard for him every time the boys saw someone wanted to give things away. That's why it was easier, and I think that's why it was easier for a lot of the good guys to stay in smaller groups because it's easier to provide for two people opposed to finding food for 20 people.
Yeah. Well, and when you're having to try to find food for 20 people and you can't, that's how the cannibalism...
Yeah. I'm sure
that's starts. It's not an A to B. There's a whole lot in between.
Straight
there.
Straight to people, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so to compare and contrast the three books, what were y'all's thoughts on that?
Well, I guess we were already talking about community and just kind of how I feel like the community in A Last Babylon was they had a purpose, and then the man and the son both had a purpose, you know what I mean? And the community in A Last Babylon, their purpose is just to help each other, because they had, like, they were really, it was really easy for them to have a life that they could still be able to love each other and experience some form of happiness.
Yeah.
The man and the son, really, their purpose is a little more basic. It's really just getting to this coast or whatever, getting south, and just staying alive, but it's also carrying the fire, like we've already said. And then, but in Anthem, I felt like the government in the beginning of Anthem really has no purpose, and so you see him finding a purpose through the book.
Yeah,
like their place in the government. Or just,
well,
the government entirely.
The government's overall goal is really nothing. I mean, it's really kind of just keeping people alive, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not like there's not a deeper purpose to it, and it's not really about making.
Yeah. They died they were saying kind of young.
Yeah,
too, so,
and it's really not about anybody experiencing more out of life or anything like that.
Yeah.
Whereas in the other books, they kind of are.
Yeah. I mean, I think... Well, you go ahead, Lacey. What?
No, I think the big comparison for me in the three was, I guess, just how dark the road was.
Yeah.
as far as in A Last Babylon, you could still kind of feel like they were just cut off, but they still were living life. Exactly what Shug said. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They still had other people, and I don't know. I just saw reading it just a lot more color to things and life to things. And then even in Anthem, you know, it wasn't as bright, but it still was. They still had fields of wheat that were different colors, or grass, or you know, they had different colored tunics or clothes that they wore to determine what they did. You see me? There was more color to it, but in the road, it just was dark. The whole thing, you could, you know, feel the coldness, and
yeah,
I mean, even the snow was gray.
Yeah, I think something you said, it was like you felt like, yeah, I could probably survive The Last Babylon, or I could probably survive Anthem.
Yeah.
I mean, even if I didn't get out or whatever.
Yeah.
But the road, it's like, it really makes you question, ooh, I don't know if I could handle it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, like, in the road, the things that I thought about that... that did have color, or like the tarp, and then like you see color, it's almost like when they would open up the cans of like peaches or something,
yeah,
there would be color in that.
Yeah.
So it's like almost
spots of, or sporadic color, but
it's all the things that are saving them.
Yeah.
Or things that are kind of symbolizing that there was another time before them or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that I think the color thing is a good point, because I feel like it's a really, like, from A Last Babylon to the Road, it's like the 1950s view, like, we're gonna survive this thing, we're gonna beat it, to, like, the 2000s view, which is just bleak, just like our societies are that way.
Yeah.
At this point, you know, in the 1950s, there was just so much hopefulness.
Yeah,
we're more extreme. Like, we're just more extreme. Yeah.
Right, which is, we discussed the extremes of just the nature, the content of the book has grown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Last Babylon didn't really delve into the extremes of human experience quite like the road did.
Yeah.
And that's what I was kind of saying before. I don't know if I could really handle it emotionally. Like, I don't...
Yeah.
You know, like you said, like...
Yeah.
I feel like I could survive, but that just the... I think just the cold and the harshness of the environment, not necessarily the toughness. Like, I think I would be able to learn how to...
Yeah, I think you're tough enough, but you especially...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Emotionally, I don't think I could handle the hurt of other people hurting other people, or taking advantage of other people. I feel like, and I know this sounds awful, I would be the dumb one falling for the trap to help the old man on the side of the road and getting caught.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Yeah. Although I wouldn't want to, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, and maybe I would grow hard. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like the dad, you know, I'm sure the son had to learn love and kindness from somewhere.
Yeah.
And maybe the dad just grew hard over time.
Yeah.
I don't know, so it's just interesting. It was interesting to go from A Last Babylon to Anthem, which was, I guess, a little more extreme.
Yeah.
Or a little more...
Yeah, rigid. I saw Anthem as being, like, a more of a contrast between two different, like, parts of... You know, there's the city where I saw it as being very gray and, like, just a bleak existence.
Yeah. There's start,
maybe not as bleak, but just
bland.
Yes,
exactly.
Bland's a good word. Yeah,
just totally, not life, living dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lifeless. But then, when he gets to the woods, everything is
changes.
Much brighter, and
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the comparison of the three to, like I said, I think A Last Babylon is a lot more focused on the story. I mean, I think there's depth to it, and there may be less depth to it than we ascribe to it, but there's that, and then there's Anthem where, you know, it's really about the point. The story is secondary to where you have the road where it's really, he kind of walks that line of there's still a really compelling story here, but there's so much depth to it that you have to kind of mine for the meaning in there.
Yeah, and I feel like that story is really about good and evil, and it could be told in different scenarios, you know what I mean? Rather than the post-apocalyptic, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It could be told and has been told before.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, I think too, it's just it goes from very hopeful in A Last Babylon to almost completely hopeless in The Road. But you know, I guess the comparison of the main characters, and you could debate which is the main character in The Road, but I think the comparison of the main characters are
the main character is one person.
Yeah, okay. Well,
but yeah.
Yeah. No, but I guess maybe their journey is all the same. In the end, you know, they're looking to find meaning in that world. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a journey of the individual, really. What is their purpose?
Yeah, because that the leader in all three of them is just able to, is so much, is perfectly placed in their position, you know what I mean? Like we already talked about Randy being almost a failure until the day, you know what I mean? Until he's given this opportunity to lead, and then, you know, Anthem, Prometheus being perfectly suited for what he's doing, you know?
Yeah.
His whole life he was born like he was going to be that way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the man, just, he's got all of the skills and knowledge that he needs to be able to take care of his son.
Yeah, and I think there's, for each of them in each story, there's a different reason, but there's a reason for them continuing down the path that they continue down, and a reason that they are well suited for the position that they play in the story.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
What else?
It was a good series.
Yeah, it was good.
I enjoyed seeing the contrast between just different ideas of what it would look like if something big happened.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And
each story made you think of a different way of maybe you would choose, or a different way you should live, or maybe what you would do in each situation.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like we didn't really even discuss as much the practical aspects of it, which is what I like.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but on any of the three of them, I don't know. But
I think we discussed it a little bit more.
More on The Last of Babylon, because it's more like
the practical.
It's probably the most practical. Well, I don't know. In the event of a nuclear war, the world could look a lot more like The Road. But anyways.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that we ended up talking more about the mental and kind of spiritual aspects of the apocalypse than
the meaning behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you think deeply about it, it's going to make you question your level of preparedness for something like that. And I don't really mean in a physical sense of your level of preparedness, but in your spiritual or mental or emotional sense that am I prepared for this? What is the decision that I'm going to make? You know,
kind of to go just to the, for anything. Can you handle crisis?
Yeah.
But I think all three of them, for me, go back to faith, which is what we kind of talked about before. That's what kept them going. I mean, Randy too, he had faith that they were able to do whatever they needed to do and that they would find a solution. They found the salt at the end.
Yeah.
They, you know what I mean? Just the same one in Anthem. He had faith that something, there had to be something greater, so he was going to take a chance in the woods.
Yeah.
Rather than
just
keep surviving and essentially not living. And then we've talked about in the road about that's what made them keep going.
Yeah.
Was faith that there was something more to that they would find food again and that they would do it by living by the code.
Yeah.
And so for me that's
yeah, and I think one cool thing that is contrasted through all the books and different characters too is almost that balance of like what I talked about last week and I've talked about this week is that balance of like when is it beneficial to die and when is it beneficial to live. Like there's characters in all of the books that contrast that and make you kind of confront that thought.
Yeah.
You know, and I think even in this one with the wife, you know, and how she talks about how her heart was ripped out when the day the boy was born, you know, it's even just another character to think about, you know, to compare back to the banker in The Last Babylon or to the man in the that gets burned at the stake in Anthem.
Yeah.
And so I think it's, you know, it kind of makes you question your level of preparedness and what you would do in that situation. But I mean, and then also there, I think, like you said, Suge, I think sometimes maybe we've put the practical parts of it on the back burner, but I think really in a situation like that, a theoretical situation like that, you have to make your decision first.
Yeah.
Your mind and your heart has to be set on what you're going to do in that situation before you can really even move into the practical. Because you can have a good plan practically in a situation like that, but that doesn't mean that you're equipped to handle that situation.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good series.
It was good. Enjoyed it. Yeah. So what's next?
Next week we're going to be reading The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway. Shug's already read it. He said it was really good.
Yeah.
I've read some Ernest Hemingway books, and I've always liked them. So
I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah. His style is amazing.
Yeah.
He's very, like, he puts you in the character. Like different, I don't know. It's just different.
Yeah.
His economy of words compared to how much you feel you understand the character. Does that make sense? It's a really short book, but
right. Yeah.
I mean, I said it already. I feel like I understand the character more than in any book I've ever read. So
yeah.
Cool.
It's cool.
Cool. So if you liked what you heard, give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. And listen to us next week. Thanks for listening.